You are listening to the Small Screen Podcast, part of the Invasion Radio Podcast Network. For pop culture and movie chat, check out the Popcast Podcast. And for insight on the hottest music, listen to the speaker box below. You can find all of the Invasion Radio podcasts at screeninvasion.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Small Screen Podcast, episode 48. I'm your co-host, Crystal Bailey, writer at screeninvasion.com.
And I'm Marcos. You can read my blog, smallscreenhappenings.com, and I also write for thetelevixen.com and screeninvasion.com.
And we're back. It's been kind of a long hiatus with the holidays and flu season. I was kind of out of it for a while, so can't really record when you're hacking up a lung. So it's been a while, and we are excited to dig back in to all things television. Let's kick it off with the news. Big news for both of us since we watch the show, The Vampire Diaries. They just announced there's going to be a spinoff focusing on the originals and their storyline. And what are your thoughts on this spinoff news? Are you excited, sad about the fragmentation? Thoughts?
To be very honest, I'm kind of torn about this news because, like you said, we both really enjoy Vampire Diaries, but I think it's safe to say that one of the aspects that we are not too fond of are the originals. So giving them their own show could be problematic just because, again, it's just something that I'm not as interested in compared to everything else that's going on in Mystic Falls. So I don't know if that would immediately draw me in unless they really are able to somehow revitalize my care and interest for them as the season goes on. And I'll be honest, I'm very behind on The Vampire Diaries, so I'm not even sure if they're starting to lay that foundation. I do know that there's going to be a backdoor pilot sometime in the near future that's just going to focus on the originals and set the scene and the world and the idea of what the spinoff is going to be. And I'm going to be excited to watch that, and that'll probably be the litmus test to convince me if I'm going to watch it or not. I'll probably definitely watch the first couple episodes if it does actually go to series. And I don't see why it wouldn't, because the CW is struggling as it is, and I'm sure they know or they feel that they already have a very successful property to work off of, and it hopefully will be a hit, but then I think they thought the same thing with The Secret Circle, so we'll just have to see. What about yourself?
I'm excited about this news, not necessarily because I want the show, like I want to watch the original show, but because I feel like The Vampire Diaries, as of late, you know, is all about the originals. And it's been that way for a while where, you know, we have these characters and like this world before the originals came. But then since then, it's like been all about them and their sibling drama, their family drama, their backstory. So to give them their own show, I think makes a lot of sense because there is a lot of mythology there. Mm-hmm. But whether like I watch it or not, I'm excited to see what The Vampire Diaries can do once they're out of the picture and on their own again. Just because, you know, the past like two seasons has been all about Klaus and the originals and Elijah and Rebecca and all these things. And then there's like always been like one plot about them, and then one plot with Elena and, like, the people we started with. And so, like, I feel like by having this spinoff show, it'll allow Vampire Diaries kind of go back to those roots with the characters that we originally loved and dig into them again. Because, like, for example, Bonnie has hardly been, featured as of late. Well, you'll see in the episodes you catch up on, she kind of gets a bigger role, but she was, you know, one of the best friends and was supposed to be this big part, and she had this big storyline when all of her witchiness started, but then she got pushed to the wayside as the originals kind of took front and center. So I am excited to see not just the spinoff and how that does, but to see what The Vampire Diaries can do once again when it's allowed to focus on other storylines outside of the originals.
And that's a good point. I think that's probably the best case scenario under these circumstances, is that The Vampire Diaries would be able to refocus itself and just jettison the originals off on their own. But also part of me is wondering if they're just going to ask the originals to do double duty. Like, they'll still be a big part of the Vampire Diaries while telling all of the backstory of where they came from and kind of do it that way. Who knows? I mean, because I really don't see the originals spinoff being a present-day story, because it does sound like it's them rising to power and establishing themselves in New Orleans and stuff like that. From what I've read, who knows where it eventually go, but then, you know, they're so ingrained in the current mythology that I wonder if they would just be written off completely, or if they'll just pop up like Angel did, you know, or things like that. You know, so I would be
okay with that, you know, with not like crossover, because like you said, it's not necessarily a modern tale, but, you know, just having them do like limited guest spots. Mm-hmm. In the future, that, I mean, that's fine, because they are, like I said, such a big part of the Vampire Diaries right now. I just think by having them, like, particularly the actors on a different show, there's just not enough time for them to do both shows. Even if, like, storyline wise they could, you know, but yeah, I just want to get back to more to like Mystic Falls and like the people and the storylines that like we got there, rather than having it focus on the originals all the time, which is what it's become. And so by having a spinoff, I think it'll free it up to do that. And then another like big news, another show we both watch, How I Met Your Mother announced that it would come back for one final season. Season 9 next year will be the last one. And, we'll meet the mother and all that stuff. It's like gonna happen. What are your thoughts on the final season news?
You know, I can't even muster any emotion at this point. You know, it wasn't too surprising, because CBS was not going to let this show end. And I was hoping that Jason Segel was going to hold out and that he would have been the linchpin that blew everything up and we would finally get an end date. And I guess in some way we did, because we do know that this is going to be the final season. But I've been so disinterested this season, and now that it looks like they really are going through with Barney and Robin for right now, I have no reason to watch this show anymore. So I'll probably check in here and there, and I'll definitely catch up and probably tune in for the series finale. But as of right now, I don't know if my loyalties are strong enough to keep putting up with this show.
But it's, the end is in sight. Like, it's gonna be over soon. You gotta stick it through to the end, right?
You know, a few months ago, or, you know, even a few weeks ago, I might have said that. But even the few episodes I've watched since they've come back from their hiatus, I don't laugh anymore. I'm not invested in any of their relationships or the characters anymore. I mean, this used to be one of those shows that I just loved the bond between the core five. And at this point, I really don't care about any of them or their relationships. Like, Ted has just devolved as a character. I've always hated Barney and Robin, so I'm not going to care about them. Marshall and Lily have become insufferable since they become parents. And there's just nothing there that should keep me going, except for that just stubbornness of seeing it through. And, you know, maybe I just need a break from it, and I'll catch up on the rest of this season down the line, and maybe that'll rejuvenate me for the final season. And I'm glad there's at least an end date in sight and something that they're going towards, but at this point, I don't know if that's going to be able to focus the showrunners enough to give us a well-scripted, well-thought-out ending, you know, because they've been jerking us around for so long that I've just lost faith in them.
And, you know, that's fair, and I do agree that the show is nowhere near where it was, but I do plan on sticking it through. I mean, I also actually do like Barney and Robin, so that storyline doesn't grate on me like it does you. But I'm gonna have a little faith in Thomas and Baze, and, you know, they've had this ending, like, they have always had an ending in mind. It's just, you know, the fact that the show wasn't ending that they, you know, drew things out for so long, you know. They didn't know when the show would end, and they didn't want to introduce the mother too soon, even though I think they should have, but, you know, they stuck to their guns and they didn't want to introduce the mother, like, in season four and then have four more seasons with the mom mm-hmm. there. So I'm going to hold out hope that now that they have an end date, now that they know it's going to be over in this set amount of time, they can start finally putting this end picture that they've had in mind for so long, they can finally start putting that in place. And, you know, the wedding, the Barney and Robin wedding is still happening in this season. And that is when he meets the mom. Like, they've already shown us a couple scenes from the wedding. You know, you don't see her, obviously, but you see him seeing her. And so I'm going to stick it through to the end.
You know, and that's all well and good. And like I said, I'll probably keep tabs on it. But the thing about this show at this point, for me at least, is they keep saying that it's the destination, or it's not the destination, it's the journey. But the thing is, I'm tired of the journey. Like, I just want to get off the bus. And, you know, something has always prevented me from doing that. Because, I've always had that in the back of my mind, this insane hope that at the very end of the day, it's going to be Ted and Robin. And I still think that that's going to happen at the very last second. But, you know, they've just been spinning their wheels too much. And, you know, that was the last thing that kept me going. And since it looks like, for at least for the rest of this season and for the foreseeable future, that's off the table, then, you know, why should I watch?
That's fair. I'll let you know how it goes, since I'll still be watching every week.
But do you actually find it funny? I guess that's the biggest thing as well. Like, I just don't find the show funny anymore.
It's definitely not as funny as it used to be, as it can be. And, like I do agree with you that, like, Marshall and Lily, like, since having the baby, they are not funny. They're jokes about, and I say jokes with, like, air quotes, because they're just not funny. They don't hit for me. They just are caricatures of people they used to be at this point. But there are, you know, I find myself laughing at, you know, at some point every episode. So it's not, you know, it's not completely a wash for me. But if you're not finding it funny and you don't like Barney and Robin and you're tired of the journey, you know, it's just like all these things. I totally understand why you're off the boat. I'm just saying I'll stick through the one remaining season. If they didn't have an end date and if it were still going to go on, like, who knows how long, I might jump off at this point too, just because I don't think it's anywhere near as, like, enjoyable every week. But there's enough there for me to, like, tune in, you know, on life support type deal.
Okay. And one last little bit of ranting, because I just want to get, I don't know if we talked about it earlier, but how did you feel about Barney's proposal?
It was ridiculous, but I don't know, I thought it was kind of cute, and, like, I was surprised that it worked, you know, because it's totally unbelievable that it would work. But I thought, you know, as a big grand gesture, calling back to the playbook and all these other, like, little, like, clues, I guess, that he dropped. I did like it. I did like that it explained the whole Patrice thing, because that never made sense to me. And so for it to end up having been a part of this whole grand plan, I thought made it make sense in that sense.
Okay, because I think that was my breaking point. Because I think that was a microcosm of everything I've felt was wrong with Barney and Robin. Because he was being nothing but manipulative, and to me it wasn't a cute grand gesture. To me it was a scumbag duping this woman into marrying him. And for a second there, I really did believe that she wasn't going to fall for it, but she did. And that just cemented my belief that she's gone from one of the best characters on television to one of the worst. Because old Robin wouldn't have put up with that. Old Robin wouldn't have settled for something like that. But this Robin did. And so, since I never cared for that pairing to begin with, and the fact that it's taken two characters that I once liked and turned them into people that I just despise, and maybe they deserve each other because they're so broken and horrible at this point, but that's not a relationship I'm going to root for. So that was kind of it for me. And, you know, they've been building up to this moment, and that's what they wanted to do, so more power to them, but, you know, I don't have to keep watching it. But I said that before, and I know myself a little too well. I probably will check in now and then, but, you know, I'll be content with having other things to do on Monday nights.
Yeah, there's a lot of TV on Monday nights, which we'll talk about in the next section. But so you definitely won't be, you know, bored.
Yeah, that's very true.
But yeah, so speaking of, what have you been watching lately?
Building off the segue, a Monday night show that I wanted to talk about quickly is ABC Family's Bunheads. And I know that you don't watch it, but I just quickly wanted to give it some love on the podcast because it's a charming show that's obviously in the vein of Gilmore Girls because Amy Sherman-Palladino is the creator of Bunheads. But it's so much more than just a Gilmore Girls ripoff. It's got a little bit more depth to it, at least in my opinion, because what it does, it's been able to combine the best parts of Gilmore Girls along with Glee and So You Think You Can Dance and just put it all together in this kind of weird mashup of a just sweet, sentimental show that I just enjoy watching. And I kind of picked up on it when it first debuted in the summer, and it fell off a little bit for me, but I binge-watched it right before its mid-season premiere a couple of weeks ago, and it really did find its footing, and these first couple episodes back have been really strong because it's been actually focusing more on the dancers and the teenagers versus just the adults, which was kind of problematic at the beginning, and it's really been focusing on the relationship between Sutton Foster's character and the four ballerinas that she's been teaching and mentoring, and that's the relationship I cared most about, and so I'm happy that they're really focusing more on those aspects. But, you know, it's a show that's not for everyone, and I understand that, but for those people who enjoy shows like Gilmore Girls or Heart of Dixie, I think this would be right up their alley because it's got that quirky sentimentality that those shows thrived on, and I think that it would be a nice addition to someone's lineup. And especially, it's something that I would actually suggest you check out if you ever have a chance, because since it does obviously deal with dance, you'll see a lot of So You Think You Can Dance alums on there, like Kent Boyd. Kent Boyd's had a few episodes as Jordan, who is this like breakout star ballerina, and he's like a teacher now, and he's overbearing, and it's just funny to watch. And I think, I'm not sure which season she won. I think it was season 5. I don't know what her name is, but she's the recurring character now. So people who enjoy and appreciate the art of dance would really get a kick out of the show because there's always at least one or two big dance routines built in to every episode. And that's what really kind of really draws me in because I'm just amazed by what these young girls can do day in and day out. So yeah, I just wanted a quick little plug for Bunheads because it's a cute show that I enjoy watching.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that there were some So You Think You Could Dance people on there, so I might have to check into those episodes.
Yeah, definitely. And another show that I quickly wanted to talk about before I go into my longer spiels is FX's Justified. It came back for its fourth season, and I've been on record saying that I didn't love season 3, but so far season 4 has been a big improvement just because they've changed the structure up a little bit. Usually in the past, they would take a big bad for the entire season and focus on that person and how they're getting it, being a thorn in Raylan Givens' side. And now it's focusing more on just a season-long arc, and I think that shift in focus has really revitalized the show, so I'm really enjoying that. And I am recapping it for SpoonInvasion.com, so people who are interested in my thoughts can definitely read them there. And another FX show that I've been recapping and watching is Archer. And I'll say so far so good, you know, in terms of this season. I think that the episodes that have aired have been lacking in some narrative depth, but I think they've been funny enough to keep me entertained. Like, there's not momentous occurrences that are going on in all of these episodes. They're just, for the most part, it's just purely an action comedy. And so they work off various spy tropes and play with them a little bit. But the jokes more often than not land. The one joke that didn't quite land for me, and it was a disappointment, was the very first scene of the season premiere, which, spoiler alert for those who haven't watched it, but you should have already. I don't know why you haven't. H. John Benjamin also voices Bob on Bob's Burgers, and so the beginning of the season premiere was Bob's Burgers in Archer universe, and so he had amnesia and was playing Bob, and his family was there, and it was just a funny way to start off the season. But the reason why it didn't quite land for me is because FX actually ruined it for me, because I watched a lot of FX between Justified, American Horror Story, Sons of Anarchy, and the promos actually showed it. Like, they showed him as Bob in the restaurant. And so I was like, okay, well, I know it's coming now. So when I saw it, I'm like, eh, okay, that happened. I knew it was going to happen. So FX, if you're listening to this, do better when it comes to your promo. Stop giving
you ruined it.
Yeah, stop ruining FX jokes.
Yeah, I didn't know it was coming because, honestly, I DVR, like, all of my TV, so I rarely watch commercials. And when I do, I'm like, what is this? Why? So I didn't know it was coming. I didn't actually see how it would look until I watched the episode. And because it was so unexpected I just out of the blue, but so smart, because, you know, he is the voice of both. And I thought they did a good job of, like, saying how his amnesia, and it was fun, like, it was really funny to see. So I thought that was great. But yeah, again, I can see how having it ruined and, like, told it was going to happen in advance definitely detracted from the overall joke.
And so have you been watching the rest of the season, or did you just catch the premiere?
Of Archer?
Yeah.
I'm caught up. I watched the last one with the legs.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I didn't like that episode as much, but it was funny to see. I thought the flashback to why he hates robots was hilarious. Like you said, I don't think this season has a lot of, storyline momentum. It's just a lot of, like, jokes and stuff, which, you know, is all well and good, but I think it is making the season not quite as strong as it could be.
Yeah, and that's what I brought it up, is because that's a prime example of my thoughts of this season so far. It's, you know, it's funny, but at the end of the day, when you look at the story, I mean, I guess it's a big deal that Ray starts walking again, but they've already done that bit before, so it's like even the big reveal was something we've already seen. So I'm hoping that, you know, in the future the episodes will just have a little bit more meat to them, and I don't need the show to be like deeply serialized and have all these long drawn out arcs or things like that, but it just needs to be a little bit more than, you know, a funny take on spy cliches. So, but I'm still enjoying it, and like I said, I'm recapping it for Screen Invasion, so once again, anyone interested can always check out my reviews there. And the last show I just wanted to touch on quickly is Sci-Fi's Being Human. And this is a show that we've talked a little bit about in the past, and it did make its season 3 debut. And right out of the gate, it's a game changer because, again, spoiler alert for those who haven't watched it, at this point, both Josh and Sally are human, so they've become human. The end of season 2 with Ray and killing him and all that stuff ended up working out for Josh, and Sally was raised from the dead, and that was a big part of that first episode, and so now she's back in her body, but obviously there's some consequences that go along with her resurrection. And I think it's obviously an interesting way to go because, you know, it still seems early on in the show's run to actually turn them human. So I'm a little bit concerned in terms of its longevity. Like, I don't know how long they can keep them in their human states before it gets weird. And they're kind of touching on that right now, especially with, like, Nora and Josh and how he's kind of an outsider right now, but they don't want him to get roped back into this world. But he still has his ties to Sally and Aiden, so he can't just leave it. And obviously Nora, and now that they have Bryn's father in the picture, it's just going to get crazier and crazier. So it seems like they might have gone to this a little too soon, But right now I'm really enjoying it. Like, what are your thoughts on Josh and Sally being human at this point?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that it feels like really early for them to basically achieve what the title set out, where they're both like essentially normal people. I'm sure Sally's storyline is going to have a lot more to like mine with the witch and the way that the Trent guy, the guy from her past, like how he ended up. There's a lot there that they can really dig into. But when it comes to Josh, I just don't see how they're going to keep him an integral part of the show without making him a werewolf again, which could very easily happen and make sense within the story, given that he's still dating a werewolf. But that is kind of a interesting move where they would make him human. And then if the show continues for who knows how long, probably have to make him a werewolf again.
Yeah, and I can definitely see them going the route of him choosing this time. Like, it's starting to seem like they're creating their own pack. They have this new teenage character who recently got turned into a werewolf, and Nora took her under her wing. And like I said, there's Bryn's father now, and so he's probably going to be the main antagonist for them. And I can see a situation where Josh has to become a werewolf again to save them for some reason. And that could be a captivating twist, but it's such an obvious one that it's kind of like, what's the point of making him human then if they're just going to, you know, switch him back so easily?
Exactly, yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I guess I have some faith that they'll be able to mine it for a lot of good stuff before they go down that path. But I'm enjoying it. And for the first time probably ever, I actually care about Aiden. And I think it's because this is the first time his story doesn't really involve being a part of the vampire political hierarchy, which I always thought was kind of dull. And I really do think that his storyline involving this flu epidemic that's killing off the vampires and not taking them down from the perch and making them below the werewolves could be really interesting. So
well-timed, too, given the actual flu epidemic this season. And as I was watching it, I was like, how did they know?
Sci-fi actually put it out there.
Viral marketing, literally.
Exactly. So, yeah, how are you feeling about Aiden? I mean, have you ever really cared about that character or liked him? Or?
I definitely think he was the least interesting of the three like creature storylines, you know? Just because, you know, I have seen a lot of vampire lore, having like watched all of the shows. And I just, you know, I didn't really, like you said, the vampire like hierarchy, the politics that they had never really drew me in the way like True Blood's hierarchy did, for example. So this storyline I do think is very interesting, and I did really like the way he handled his sire's blood slave. I liked that whole storyline, how they handled that, and how he's like trying to feed, and the way that his sire, I can't remember his name, but how he ended up, like, I thought that was a really great moment for like them and like the show and the season in particular. So I do think this is a great direction that they're headed in, rather than the whole like politics of vampirism that they were in previous seasons.
Yeah, definitely a good start. There's one thing, though, that they've been hinting at that I'm really afraid of, and it looks like they might be entertaining the thought of an Aiden-Sally pairing and a hookup.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely afraid of that. Like, I do not want that to happen, because this is one of those shows where the friendship between these three characters are so much more important than any kind of love interest, that if they do that, it could possibly ruin the show for me. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely am picking up those vibes as well. And like how now that she's corporeal and human and can be a love interest, I definitely see his, you know, his mind kind of thinking that too. But I agree that the three of them as friends, as these, you know, like, not siblings, but, you know, they definitely don't have they don't have to have that romantic chemistry. And I think if they actually follow through that route, it would just complicate things more than it's worth, I feel, for drama, you know?
Agreed.
So hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully he finds another blood source or something where they don't end up hooking up. But we'll see.
Fingers crossed. So those are all my shows. What about you? What have you been watching?
Oh, my gosh, so much. To go off of Being Human, the other Sci-Fi Monday show that I've been marathoning through, essentially, is Lost Girl. We talked about it before when Sci-Fi aired season one, but then I just kind of missed season two while it was on the air. And so it is on Netflix Instant now for anyone listening and wants to watch. And I watched all of season two, and that now season three is on. I'm finally caught up. I love the show. It definitely has like this great world building with all the Fae and everything. There's always kind of a new surprise with that, and they're handling it very well. And I love the dynamics between Bo, Lauren, and Dyson. It's a love triangle, so like how long can they really draw out a love triangle? You know, some shows do it forever successfully. Some of them, after a season, you're already fed up. But I do think that Lost Girl's handling it very well. You know, they can bring in some Fae magic. You know, Dyson couldn't love her for most of season two with the way things, because he, like, gave up his ability to love to save her, you know, magic stuff. And so I think that helps make it, and then now him getting his love restored, that helps him make it a really dynamic love triangle, because you actually, like, these are actually good reasons why they can't be together. Because, you know, sometimes, like, it's like, oh, we work together and we can't be together. And you feel like that's kind of a lame reason. Like, with the whole magic storyline, and they've been able to handle it really well, where you understand and you get it, which I think is great, because they're already this season three, and they are still juggling the love triangle pretty well. Like, she's with Lauren now, but how long is she going to be with Lauren? Because Dyson loves her still. It's good. I really enjoy that. And then I'm on season three. Have you been keeping up with it?
Yeah, I have. Much like you, it fell off my radar somewhere, like, in mid-season one. I just kind of stopped watching it, and then I missed all of season two. And like you, I binged on it and marathoned it over, like, a weekend, all of season two and most of season one. And season two was just a really solid season of television. I still think season one had its problems, and it still wasn't as interesting as I would have liked it to be, because when we first talked about it, a year ago, you know, it fit that mold that we all are very familiar with. I mean, it's like Supernatural, it's like Angel, it's like all these other supernatural procedural shows that we like. But at that point, I was getting a little bit tired of them, and so that's one reason why I never kept up with Lost Girl. But season two had more of a season-long arc going for it, with the Garuda and the new Ash and all this other stuff, and so I was really captivated by that season. And so far with season three, I'm still enjoying it, but I'm glad you brought up the love triangle, because that's probably the one thing I have the most issue with, because I've never bought her and Lauren together. Like, I've always felt like her being the type of person she is and her sexuality, sometimes it always felt like it was a kind of a gimmick at the beginning. Like, we're going to make her bisexual because we can, and we're in Canada, and we can be edgier than those, you know, stuck-up Americans, you know. And I've always felt like it was just kind of a hook to get people watching. And I never really, you know, like I said, I never really believed them as a true couple. And I've always seen her and Dyson as more of a natural pairing. So having her and Lauren together at the beginning of the season, I see why they went in that direction. And I appreciate what they're doing on this show. But I guess my Team Dyson loyalties are too deep that I'm kind of like, oh, I'm just already tired of them as a couple, and I want her and Dyson to have their shot.
I agree with you. I do think Bo and Dyson makes a whole lot more sense overall. But like I said, you know, the storyline of how he just, like, couldn't love her because that was, like, ripped from him, like, that made sense why they couldn't be together then.
Oh, but, yeah, like, definitely.
So now that season three, he has his love back, but she doesn't know this. So, I mean, obviously she and Lauren are together now, but with his love back, that's not technically probably going to be the case for the whole season. So I'm excited to see where it goes, because I do think they're handling the love triangle really well, even though I do agree that Bo and Dyson makes more sense.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily – the reason why I'm not necessarily buying it or as in love with it as you are, it has nothing to do with the fact that they shortchanged it. Again, I agree with you that I think they did the legwork and made – the current situation makes sense, and I see the progression, and I understand why they are where they are. Again, it kind of goes back to the fact that it's just the machinations of Lauren and Bo together never landed for me since day one. Again, I always thought it was just something that the show thought they could get away with because they're in Canada, you know, and it's something that they wanted to set themselves apart from all these other shows, which is an admirable thing to do. I'm glad they did that. But yeah, it's never quite tracked with me. And you know, again, I'm a Dyson guy. Like I just like his character more than Lauren. He's probably my second favorite character on the show, if not my first favorite character. And so I'm just more invested in his journey. And whether that ends up with Bo or not, you know, whatever. I just think they're just more interesting of a couple. But right now, he's keeping me watching. And that last episode where they were infected with this thing. Did you see the last episode where they were?
What happened in the last one?
The Morgan decided to use Vex as a way to get back at them, and she planted this bug on him, and he.
Oh yeah, where they kind of like, where they kind of were devolving and like childlike.
Yeah, they were like preteens or something, like teenagers, and like just watching him cut loose just makes me love this show even more because he's so, you know, he's such a serious character and he's trying to be the rock and everything like this, but whenever he gets a chance to not take himself too seriously, I love the character even more, and I think the one episode in season two that really made me love the show was when the body swap. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was playing Kenzie, and he just was so perfect in that role. I was like, okay, this show is something special. And
that was a standout episode for sure.
So yeah, I mean, season three so far so good. I'm liking it. Obviously there are things I'd like to see done a little bit differently, but it's still solid enough to keep me invested in watching, so.
Yeah, no, I agree that, I mean, there's only been a few episodes of season three, but I'm a little disappointed that, the new Ash.
Hale.
I'm disappointed that he's the new Ash, because it does take him out of the group a little, and I thought he was, like, finally becoming a good part of the group in season two, and with the like tension between him and Kenzie, and then now he's the new Ash and he's just kind of a little removed, so I'm bummed that he's not as big a part of the group anymore. And another thing is, at the end of season two, there was like the moment where Kenzie went to the tree and like some like fey goop landed on her, and then like that's never really been followed up on. I thought something cool would happen, like she would become part fey or something, but nope.
Yeah, yeah, I remember they alluded to it in the premiere, and maybe they'll get back to it, but yeah, they just seem to, like, forget about that. And I agree with you about Hale being the Ash, because he was a good part of the group, and him and Dyson were another reason why I was really enjoying that second season. But, you know, it's kind of a give and take, because putting him on the sideline for a little bit was able to allow Vex to kind of get some more screen time. And I like Vex. I mean, he's a little bit too... He's too much like Spike right now, because he's the bad guy working with the good guys, and he's British. So he's very much a ripoff of that character. And it's hard not to think that when I'm watching it. But he's got enough good one-liners, and I kind of like the idea of him being torn between the light and the dark. So I've appreciated what they've been doing with him. And now that he's on his sabbatical, maybe Hale will be able to be reintegrated a little bit more. So, I mean, neither one of them are major characters, so they can come in and out, but I do agree that I would like more Hale, and maybe this is a chance for us to get that.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so that's the main thing I've been watching, because I've marathoned through season two, and now season three has been on. But there's been a couple new shows I also checked out. The Following on Fox with Kevin Bacon. I caught the first two episodes of that. And, you know, I like it, but I don't think it's that great, because, you know, it's trying to be that cable show on network. You know, I am surprised at how much gore they're able to get away with, given that it's Fox at 9 p.m., but it still feels like it's trying to be cable, but it's, like, you know, a little chained. But, you know, it's two episodes in, it's pretty strong. I love Edgar Allan Poe and, like, all of his work. So far, all of those allusions and, you know, references have been great. Have you checked out The Following? What are your thoughts on it so far?
Yeah, I've been watching it. It was probably one of my most anticipated shows of 2013. And I've been enjoying it for the most part. I think, like you said, it's very much Fox's attempt to be edgy and cable. And I think that's why it's been doing okay in terms of its ratings. I think it was, like, the second highest rated debut of the season, right behind Revolution. And it's been able to maintain that. It's just been two episodes, so we'll have to definitely see if it's able to maintain those numbers. But right now it's showing that people will take those cable sensibilities and watch it anywhere. You know, hopefully it's able to help shepherd in a new model of television drama for broadcasts. But in terms of its actual content, I mean, it's okay. I mean, the serial killer aspect was interesting, and it's so far it's been paying off like I've been expecting it to, but I don't know if it's something that I'm going to be invested in long term. We'll just have to see how, like, the next few episodes are. But I'm enjoying Kevin Bacon's performance. I think he's been standout. And I'm liking Natalie Z's involvement, even though it took her away from Justified. But she really wasn't doing much on Justified, so I'm glad she's got a major role on this show. You know, the whole cult aspect could be something that works, but right now I'm not seeing it being fleshed out as much as I'd like. But again, we're two episodes in. Who knows where it'll go from here. I'm not as turned off by the gore or any of that stuff. I mean, it is a little bit shocking that they are getting away with some of the stuff, but, you know, this is a time slot that has Criminal Minds and it has SVU and all these other shows that are similar in some aspects. And again, I don't watch them, so I don't know how graphic those shows are. But those are also shows that tend to do well, so I'm not too surprised that Fox is able to turn that into something successful. And you know, I'll keep up with it for the next couple of weeks, and that'll be a true test. I was surprised about how many critics dislike this show. Like, a lot of the critics that I read and listen to, like Alan Sepinwall and Dan Feinberg and Andy Greenwald, they all hated this show for some reason. And I was kind of going in, you know, suspiciously optimistic. And I'm liking it more than they did, but, you know, who knows? We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it got such, I feel like hatred might be too strong a word, but, you know, just, like, it didn't have the critical backing that I was expecting, given that it is Kevin Bacon and Kevin Williamson, I think is his name. The guy who was behind Vampire Diaries, doesn't he do The Following as well?
Yes.
So he's got, you know, the critical love prior. But, yeah, I was surprised that they weren't really on board with The Following.
It might just be content, because I guess the biggest criticism about the show is how it fetishizes violence. And I guess I'm not seeing that in the same light, because a lot of the other shows that get a lot of critical love also does that to some extent. So, yeah. Who knows? It's not for everyone, and that's true of every TV show. So.
All right. And then the other new show I checked out, there's only been the one episode of The Americans. starring Carrie Russell on FX. I was really impressed with the first episode. It was like an hour and a half, which was pretty long, but they were able to set up the world really well, introduce these characters. And, you know, it's hard to make these hardened spies, people that we're not supposed to be rooting for because, you know, they're anti-American and trying to bring the country down from within. But I did enjoy watching the show and watching their struggles. And, you know, they balanced out the sex and violence, but with also, like, having key plot moments that kind of revolved around it. I was pretty shocked that the show opened with, like, a blowjob by Felicity. But I was like, whoa, okay, this is that type of show.
Okay, really quickly, you don't watch a lot of FX, do you?
No, I watch It's Always Sunny and Archer. Like, I don't watch the FX dramas.
Every FX drama is obsessed with oral sex. Every single one of them. That's the first thing I thought of during that scene. Like, this is another FX show willing to go down. And
well, then that's a trend I definitely was not aware of. So when I tuned in and the first scene is her going down on, like, some intelligence agent, I was like, oh, okay, let's see where this goes. But no, I thought that the whole pilot was great. The soundtrack was awesome. And they did a really great job of setting up the world and the time period and setting up these characters that I'm really excited for the next episode.
Yeah, I checked it out too, and FX's fetishes aside, I was really excited for the show. And I have to admit that I was kind of meh after the first episode. I do think that it did a lot of things well. Like you said, it was able to set up the time period, the early 80s, in a very effective way. It was able to introduce the characters well. It did some things strongly, like the action was good. I guess I was just expecting something a little bit different, though. I don't know what it was about it that it was just a tad bit off for me. And maybe it was the runtime. I think that after a while, it just started to drag on a little bit and it started to lose me in some ways. So I'm more interested to see how it works in a traditional one-hour format, even though FX does tend to stretch out its dramas a little bit, like by 5 or 10 minutes. They always have really weird run times. But there's enough there that I like. I was never a Felicity fan. I don't think I've ever watched an episode of Felicity. So I wasn't as shocked by that, I guess, because I'm like, she's not an iconic character to me. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I've liked Carrie Russell and other things. Like, I think the first thing that jumped to mind, obviously, was Mission Impossible 3, which was her also playing a spy. And so that kind of laid that groundwork, and it was easy for me to believe her in that role. But, yeah, I wanted to love it, and I just kind of liked it. And I guess I was expecting more, so.
But you'll tune in to the next episode, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll probably watch the entire season unless it really just does something crazy or just really gets dull. And I think that's probably the biggest thing for me is, like, even though it had a lot of action and it was, you know, set in this time period that I find just inherently interesting because it's a big part of my own life, it just never popped like I wanted it to. And maybe it will down the road, but I guess it kind of comes back to what we were talking about with The Following. A lot of the critics I respect love this show. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm getting a lot of good feedback and I'm hearing a lot of good things about it. I went in, you know, guns blazing, and it just fell a little bit short for me. And I think the biggest takeaway for me with both of these shows, The Following and The Americans, is just go in with your own expectations or no expectations. Like, I respect these people's criticisms and their expertise, but I tend not to always agree with them. And I think sometimes that colors my perception of these shows. So my biggest takeaway is just go in fresh. You know, it's fun to hear other people's opinions, but you need to form your own opinions before you make a judgment. And I think I let them color my opinions a little bit too much these two times around. But again, I liked it enough to where I'll be tuning in, and I just hope that it just amps up something. And I don't quite know what that is, but I just know that I need a little bit more from this show.
Yeah, I do think that when it goes down to an hour versus an hour and 37 minutes, which is pretty long. I think it'll definitely amp it up a little in terms of pacing, because I do agree that there were some slow parts. I mean, some of it was intentionally like a slow burn, but I feel like by keeping it a little more compact in like an hour five, will help that that issue. You know, they just won't be able to slow things down too much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that pretty much wraps up everything I've been, well, not everything, but everything I wanted to talk about I've been watching. So what are you looking forward to in the next week or so of TV?
The first thing I wanted to talk about is something that I don't even have to worry about a timeline, because it's Netflix's House of Cards. I can watch it whenever I want. I don't have to worry about, you know, schedules and time slots and all this other stuff. I can just turn on my TV and start Netflix whenever I want. And the reason why I want to watch it so much is I've heard good things about it, you know, kind of contradicting what I just said. But the combination of David Fincher, Kevin Spacey, you know, that was enough to kind of get me on board to begin with. But I'm really just more interested to see how this new form of television works and how Netflix is going to, you know, essentially change the way we watch. Well, it's already changed the way we watch television, but in terms of new television and new programming, and it could be a game changer. And I want this to be successful because I want companies like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu to start branching off and really focusing on original programming, because I do think that's where we're going. And if that means that shows that, you know, shouldn't be on the air get on the air, or if that means that shows that get canceled prematurely, like Arrested Development, get a second life, then I think that's nothing. That could be nothing but good for the industry. Sure, it's going to cause some havoc, but I think that's good, and I think that's interesting. So I want to see how the quality is and if it's worthy of being one of the front runners of this new form of television entertainment. So you said you watched it so far. How do you feel, without getting into details and spoilers, like, do you feel like it's worthy of being, you know, the flag bearer for Netflix?
You know, I'm a little over two episodes in, and it definitely feels like premium television. You know, it feels like I could maybe be watching this on like HBO as like a mini series or something, because like the acting is top notch, the directing, like, everything is like really quality. You know, it doesn't feel like a web series, which is essentially what it is, you know, being on Netflix. But yeah, no, so far it's great. Two episodes in, I'm really like, Kevin Spacey is fantastic in the lead role, which is important because it pretty much all hinges on him. And yeah, not to get into no spoilers or anything, but the two episodes in, I think it's very promising. And so to have it be like the front runner of this new digital space, television space, I think is a pretty good move. So I'm excited to see like what, I guess, measures of success Netflix is going to release. You know, it just debuted yesterday, but I feel like a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people I follow on Twitter are watching it. So it'll be very interesting to see what details they release in terms of viewership, if any. Because, I mean, they don't really need to, because they already have their money with subscriptions. But I would like to know that type of stuff.
But, yeah, I'm definitely excited to check it out, and I'm hearing good things about it, and that's only getting me more excited. So, and the last show I quickly wanted to talk about that I'm excited for is Community's coming back next Thursday for its fourth season with its new showrunners, and it's going to be interesting to see if it's able to maintain its charm now that Dan Harmon's no longer running it. You know, I'll be honest, my expectations are pretty low when it comes to Community, and it's been like that for a while. At the end of the day, if it makes me laugh and I appreciate its humor, then it's going to be a win in my book. You know, we've said in the past that this might be it, but the state of NBC, when the voice isn't on, anything's possible now, so who knows if it has some life left in it. Regardless, I'm going to enjoy this season, whether it's its last or not, and I'm just excited to have it back.
Cool, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the fans that were there, the few that were there, stick with it with the new showrunner or not. So I'll definitely be checking out the ratings that. And then what I'm looking forward to is the return of The Walking Dead. Season 3, we've talked about it a bunch on this podcast. Season 3 has been so strong. So I'm excited to see the conclusion of that storyline. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens post-season 3 when yet another new showrunner comes in. Glenn Mazzara is out after this current season, and then his number two guy, Scott Gimple, is ascending to showrunner status. So, I mean, he's been a part of the show for a couple seasons, so it's not like he's coming in fresh, but it will be a new showrunner, which always, you know, brings about some type of change. So we shall see.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how season 3 wraps up, and I'm also intrigued to see where season 4 goes. Fingers crossed that they'll be able to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so that wraps up the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal_Bailey and at Screen Invasion to stay up to date on any other TV happenings when you're not listening to this podcast.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Papa's Two Cents.
So thanks for listening.
Thanks.